JNM After Midnight. This week's episode, Transformers Dark of the Moon. All right, welcome to Not Just New Movies After Midnight, the addendum to the Not Just New Movies podcast, hosted by me, Tyler. It's a burgeoning, developing project where we talk about random things. This would have been a good area to talk about that Netflix hike, but we talked about that earlier, so that's not the topic for tonight. Tonight, let's talk about Transformers 3, Dark Side of the Moon, Laser Floyd Edition. joining me, as they did with the weekend of Bernie's duology episode, is Cater Bland from GordonandTheWhale.com and Allison Lauren from GordonandTheWhale.com. How you guys doing?
We're good.
This How is the you? Second introductory that I've had to do for you guys.
It was less star-studded than the first. I won't lie.
Yeah.
I know, I'm kidding. That was good.
Yeah, I was like, oh, here they are.
Here are these two again.
We talked about a lot of things. We talked about hobo robberies and cat fights and all kinds of stuff, so...
We experienced a cat fight / kind of a hobo robbery in the middle of that podcast, so definitely tune in.
I love the idea of hobo robberies.
I just love the word hobo. I will never not love that word.
Well, is it two hobos robbing each other?
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because I was trying to think of that myself. Is it a hobo being robbed, or is the hobo robbing the person? Or, like you mentioned, is it two hobos trying to rob each other?
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, hobos really don't have anything on them. They do have like their shopping carts of, you know, empty cans and bottles and stuff. So maybe that stuff's getting robbed. I don't know.
No, but I mean, hobos have so few possessions that, you know, I think that they'd probably be into robbing each other for, you know, like twigs and
twigs,
shivs, cigarettes, stuff like that.
Yeah, the robbery is so much more epic because you have nothing to lose.
Well, and that's what... Allison, you have a theory about hobos. Why hobos are so terrifying to you?
Sorry, I was like,
Tell us about hobos. What are your experiences with hobos? Have you ever been a hobo?
I sadly work in an area that's kind of littered with hobos.
Excellent.
But for some weird reason, I am equally enamored and terrified by hobos. And I think I'm enamored with them for the same reason that I'm terrified of them. And that is... Hobos have nothing to lose. Nothing to lose, people.
Interesting.
So, you know, I kind of am into that lifestyle where you got no consequences. You have no consequences. That's not English. But at the same time, that's terrifying. As a citizen, if you come across a hobo with nothing to lose, you know, what rules apply to that person? Nothing. So I'm enamored with their lifestyle and yet terrified of them as me.
Because, I mean, like, if a hobo commits a crime against you, what's the worst thing that's going to happen to them? They're going to go to jail. Oh, so they're going to have a bed and
a
hot meal?
Have a home.
Oh, that sounds just awful.
They can play basketball. They can run track. They can...
Yeah. They can get a shower.
Yeah. I mean it's a step up, really.
Yeah.
So you see a dual interpretation when you look at a hobo. You see life, but you also see, you know, the unpredictability of death, because you might...
Yeah.
You're enamored by the choices he makes because, you know, no rules apply. He can make any choice he wants, but also he might kill you.
Yeah.
Interesting. A very good psychological study, I say.
You know, I clearly think about hobos way too much.
Are there any documentaries being made where someone enters the world of the hobos? Maybe this is up your alley.
Oh, God.
Up your alley.
Living with the hobos. Up the alley. I got it. Nice.
Please don't send me into the hobo land, you guys. I'll never come back.
I mean, you know, if there's not, there should be.
True.
Yeah, because there was that movie made in the, I guess, 50s or 60s where the guy took a pill and his skin became real dark and he went and lived in the, you know, non-white areas of town and tried to experience, you know, that way of life. Like, we could just do the same thing where in the movie you take a pill or shoot a needle or something, you become a hobo.
Were you talking about Soul Man?
No, I wasn't. I don't know what movie that was. I watched it when I was in school because it was supposed to... I mean, it was a white guy in blackface, which is pretty offensive nowadays, but it was also...
Was
you know,
it a
he...
movie or a documentary? What was this?
No, it was a drama, I think. You're asking too many questions because I don't remember the title.
Stop it!
No. Because Soul Man was a movie in like the late 80s starring C. Thomas Howell, who used to be super dreamy, and he needed a scholarship. But he couldn't get it because he was white, and he thought he could get it if he was black. And he took, like, some tanning pills, right. And he turned black.
I think it might be an adaptation of that film. Was that a kazoo?
God, I'm crying.
I'm looking up Soul Man. I think it might say this is an adaptation of... Oh, there's Soul Men from 2008.
Ooh.
The Return.
Wait, and they showed you this film in school?
It wasn't Soul Man, though. You think it's Soul Man, but no.
But they showed you a film in which a person willingly took a pill to become a darker-skinned person and hang out with hobos?
No, you're merging the two ideas.
Darn it, I was just getting so excited and wanted to know
what he did was, he was writing a book about life in the ghetto or something like that, and so he had to look African-American, so, like, in the movie he took a pill, or he did something... and then he, like, in the movie, like, it turned him a darker skin tone, but it was just blackface. And then he, you know, went and had adventures in the projects, much like Bernie 3. But my idea for your documentary is you do, you know, along the same lines, but instead you turn into a hobo.
Got it.
Yeah. If I find the name of the movie, I'll bring it up, but I probably won't. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Please do.
I'm not very good at movies that I saw as kids.
What search terms are you searching
now? Like at first, I did. And then I went to Soul Man's Wikipedia page, and it isn't saying anything about an adaptation of a film. although it says, in spite of the controversy, the movie was a box office success.
Okay, so...
Let's move on to Transformers 3, how about?
Okay.
Unless you want to bring something up about hobos.
Can we do like a segue with hobos into Transformers?
Well, I'm pretty sure there were some hobos that died when Megatron and Sentinel Prime attacked Chicago.
Oh, so, I like that.
Let's talk about Transformers.
Because I was going to say, we could reference that one of the stars from Transformers, I believe, was raised by hobos.
Yes, Mr. Shia.
Yeah, wasn't his mom and dad like hippies or something?
They were like hippies who moonlighted as clowns on occasion.
So the story I heard is that he was raised in good old Echo Park here in Los Angeles, and dad was a bit of a drug addict, and mom was a bit of a loon, which is always a lovely pairing.
It's a fun combo.
And so wee little Shia was taken out to the park on weekends, and they all dressed up like clowns.
And they sold hot dogs.
Yeah. Out of like a... Sounded really shady.
That sounds unsanitary.
Sounds like an Extremo the Clown backstory.
Yes.
There you go. That's probably it.
Ben wrote a review of Transformers Dark Side of the Moon, Laser Floyd edition, on his site, notjustnewmovies.com. I think I read it. I think he liked it. He called it one of the best action movies of the summer. He cited back to his original Transformers review. Transformers 2 was god-awful. When I went and saw it, I think I thought it was pretty god-awful, but I don't remember. And I was going to watch both of them before I went and saw this. But Transformers 3, it was balls long, but I didn't really feel it. I thought that it moved and paced well, and although there could have been more moments with the main robot characters that I think everyone's familiar with, you know, your Optimus Prime and your Megatron and stuff like that, I think they did... a pretty good job of linking the human stories versus the robot stories, but not doing too much with the robots fighting with humans, because obviously we know the humans are just going to lose every time.
Right.
But what did you guys think about this film when you went in and saw it?
Wow.
What were you expecting first? You went in to see it, you were like, okay, is this going to be Transformers 2, or is this going to be... What did you think going in?
Yeah, I knew it wasn't going to be Transformers 2. I knew that everyone had been pretty clear about that. I knew that there's no way it could have been, because I felt like the backlash was pretty obvious enough from that the filmmakers, even though they knew, you know, it's not like they have to adhere to what the public reaction was.
Right. I mean, Transformers 2 still made a ton of money.
Exactly. It's not like it wasn't a success, but I think, you know, from what I had heard going into three, that they had taken that into consideration. And I really did enjoy Transformers, the first one. So I thought, you know, okay, you know, two definitely did not work for me. But if everyone's saying that we've kind of gone back to brass tacks and I did like one, that maybe, you know, you'll get me again in this third go around. And it wasn't that I disliked so much the film, but, you know, I think it was a combination of going in with maybe too high expectations. Even though my expectations weren't that high, I probably should have just gone in like I'd had with one and had no expectations, which might have been the way to do it. My whole thing coming out of it was after three movies and going through it with these characters, I felt disconnected from them, even though they did try to have connections between the robots and the humans. It's not that they didn't try, but for me, it just didn't resonate. It was all there, but it didn't strike any chords with me. So yeah. I was watching very passively and then became very quickly disinterested.
Yeah.
So for me, it wasn't as bad as two. It wasn't as great as one. It wasn't terrible, but I wasn't really engaged. So for me, it was, you know, you can't really get a person back after they've disengaged from something.
Well, it's like you think back to the first one, which on a really basic level was about a boy getting his first car.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
finding a robot.
Yeah. but it's like, you know, there's that bond. And I think if you remember the scene where the government comes and they take all the Transformers and Shia is, you know, busting out all of his Bumblebee. It's actually
very American.
It's kind of emotional.
It is.
And you feel really bad for him that he's losing these friends.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then that was totally thrown away in two. And that was like also gone in three. And like he even talks about how Bumblebee never hangs out with him anymore.
Yeah.
But there was still never this, you know, that's in a lot of ways the core relationship of these films.
Right.
And you don't focus on that. And then, you know, the secondary relationship would be Sam and Michaela. And they've gotten rid of Michaela.
Yeah.
And replaced her with that Victoria's Secret model,
right,
who is, you know, they're hitting you over the head with, oh, you know, you may have liked Michaela for the past two films, but it turns out she's a real bitch. And you know she's a real bitch because you don't see her, but everyone's going to talk smack about her.
Right.
And the new girl is just going to wear all white the entire time.
Right.
So, you know, she's pure and she's an angel. And Michaela was bad.
Right.
Wow, I saw a lot more than I did. I saw. I agree with you because they made her look like, you know, ridiculously hot to the point where, like, okay, no one really walks around like this. No one runs in debris and high heels and skinny jeans for the last hour of the movie.
Right.
And I also agree, and I wanted to bring that up, the point, like, the one of the main relationships is Shia LaBeouf or whatever his name is in the movie.
Sam,
thank you.
That's okay.
And Bumblebee.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, the first half hour or so, you know, we see Autobots. And we see robots, I guess.
Right.
But Bumblebee and Sam aren't together doing things, you know? And it isn't until that point where he's like, you never call.
Right.
And even after that point, you still don't see, like, a relationship reformed or anything because, you know, they're either fighting or they're boarding the space shuttle or, like, hell's coming down on everybody.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you never get a chance, even at the end of the movie, because it kind of wraps up fairly quickly.
See
kind of that exhale of everything that had happened where Sam can, you know, drive around in Bumblebee for a little bit.
Right. And I think part of the problem, and this, you know, I guess it was unavoidable when you get to this point in the franchise, but with the first one, even though we got the big action scenes, we got the big explosions and all that, you did almost not know where we were going to go. Like, you didn't know if we were going to lose Bumblebee. You didn't know if we were going to lose Optimus or Sam. You didn't know what the stakes were. And I think by the third one, you know you're going to get all this high-stakes action, but there's really nothing at stake. Everyone will probably come out of this unscathed. We might lose a wheel or a hubcap, but are you kidding me? Like, there's nothing. You're not really feeling very emotionally invested because you're like, yeah, this will look really cool, but yeah, okay. I mean, it's like a fireworks show, which is fine.
Well,
but
it's interesting you mentioned – I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, but yeah, so I was just saying, you know, there's no emotional connection, which I think is important as well.
Right, and if that existed, a loss would be hit so much harder.
Exactly.
Which some would say would improve the movie, which is interesting because it was when Transformers 1 was coming out, I had a friend who was, you know, who had been into Transformers as a kid, and, you know, he knew all the names of the robots, and I was like, all right, let's watch some of the stuff. So he went and got the movie, the cartoon that came out in, like, 1986.
Right.
And spoiler alert, for those of you that haven't seen Transformers, the animated movie, Optimus Prime dies, like, at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, and so, I didn't know that.
And so, and that's this whole thing because the kids were all emotionally attached to this character over 1, 2, 3 seasons of television.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, they're all hyped up to go see this movie, and, you know, the main character pretty much kicks the bucket at the beginning of the film.
Right.
So there were, like, angry letters from parents. Kids were crying, leaving the theaters. Like, it would, like, you would think Michael Bay would look back and be like, look how Transformers did back in the 80s. Look at this emotional connection. And then, bring me back to my point of relationships, like, Optimus Prime is the main character in this universe, whatever.
Right, right.
And, you know, they're focusing on Sam, but you would think there'd be a relationship between him, Optimus Prime, and Sam as well. And you don't really see that either. There's, like, that one, you know, conversation they have before he goes onto the shuttle where he's like, you'll always be my friend.
Right,
like,
right.
What? There's no foundation. I mean, yeah, sure, you can call anybody your friend, but where is the experience that you guys have had? I guess,
exactly.
You know, the fighting that the robots have done while Sam runs around isn't really, you know, bonding time.
Right, no. I felt like the whole movie, the way I summed it up was they told me a lot of things and they showed me nothing.
Yeah.
You know, oh, Sam and this new girl whose name I don't even remember.
Carly.
Are in love because we're telling you that they're in love.
Right.
Okay. And Sam and Bumblebee are still really close because they said that they're still close. Okay. I mean, I get that they had all the pieces there. They just didn't really connect them, I guess was my issue with it.
Well, yeah. In that vein, like Sentinel Prime, I mean, I think that, you know, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, I think that Sentinel Prime's betrayal of the Autobots is supposed to be a huge, huge moment. And it's not because we haven't known him before. We're just told, oh, you know, he's the leader. He's Optimus's like mentor,
right.
But you don't get any of that. And I understand we're working with robots here,
right.
But come on.
But if you thought about it and the twist was that Optimus had betrayed everyone, then you would be
struck. Okay, that's something.
Yeah.
Then you'd be like, oh my God, this is crazy. And because we have a relationship with him over the past 2 movies till now.
Yeah, it would have been cool if Optimus or something had been the secret to this whole thing where he knew where the technology was as opposed to this new character that had just been thrown into the mix.
Right.
But to go back to the point that you made about, you know, the emotional attachment of, like, you know, there's nothing to lose in these movies because, you know, everybody's going to go out. You know, that's something they should have done. They should have had some, you know, we're the third movie in, you know, someone needs to die, basically.
Exactly.
Trying to continue this franchise, which I believe you guys are in the movie news business, so back me up here, that there's going to be like a fourth film that's not a I hate talking about movie news, I'm sorry. Not a reboot,
right,
but also, you know, it kind of starts a new trilogy, quote unquote.
Right, right.
So, you know, that they say that, I think, to just get geeks, you know, out of their pants. But, yeah, so I think, you know, maybe that's why they didn't kill anybody off. Maybe in the new trilogy they're going to do some stuff.
Yeah.
But again, that's what the old cartoons did. Like, they needed new models for the toys, so they would kill off the old characters and bring in new characters, but that's a whole other discussion.
Right.
What were you going to say? I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, well, they did kill off one of the, was it, like, Ratchet or whoever?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, like, you don't even, it doesn't even resonate. Like, I really like the first Transformers. Even I can't remember which one it is that dies in the big, or, like, right before the battle.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't.
I was just dropping random Transformer names. I was like, where's Wheeljack? you know, where's Soundwave and all these popular ones that they work in, but no one really knows if it's them or not.
Right.
That was
right.
Another problem I had with it. You don't know which robots are which. I mean, you know Bumblebee and Optimus, but
right.
Like, I couldn't have told you who Megatron was unless I heard him talk or something, you know?
Right.
Because who was the guy with the big eye that used, like, the tentacle robots? Like, he was one, I think he was, like, I don't know their names. He was, like, Sound Boom or something.
Yeah,
so I was like, is that Megatron? Like, is Megatron just, like, up the ante with his tentacles now? And then, so it was really hard. Like, they should just say their names after every sentence so I know who's talking
about. They kind of should.
Talking about music, Allison, I believe you wrote up something on Transformers, the soundtrack. Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I do. So the deal with the soundtracks for this franchise, to their credit, they have been fairly consistent. They do a very good job of getting that summer blockbuster feel. They pick, you know, artists of the moment that are going to give you music that's going to make you want to turn up the volume, drive fast, you know, kind of roll down the windows, that whole thing. And they've also been really consistent in their choices. Linkin Park has been on all three soundtracks. Taking Back Sunday has been on all of them. The Goo Goo Dolls come back around. Obviously, you know, the music isn't a huge portion in this film, in any of the films. And that's kind of, you know, the way it is with action. They don't fall too much to music. But what I found interesting with this one was they really didn't rely on the actual soundtrack so much. They really relied on the score. And I got that impression from the initial trailers where they didn't throw the Linkin Park score over the trailer. They threw some of the actual scored music from the composer over it. And I got the impression that, you know, this third one was really supposed to be upping the ante, upping the drama. Things were at a much higher stake this time around. It wasn't just going to be, you know, driving cars really fast and robots fighting one another. There are going to be some real things at stake, which unfortunately didn't end up following through when I saw the film. But I did find it interesting that in an action film, the score was so prevalent and it wasn't, here's the Linkin Park song, here's the Taking Back Sunday. Oh, they're just playing the soundtrack and we're showing the action over it.
Yeah, this isn't that kind of movie that you would have like band music with lyrics. You know,
right.
You're like listening to the lyrics as opposed to watching the movie. You know, I agree. Like this kind of movie should rely on a score because you're watching the action as opposed to enjoying a song. You know, when he's driving down the road. Yeah, that's good. Let's throw in the Linkin Park Paramore song, whatever.
Exactly. When he's talking to the girl, throw in that Goo Goo Dolls song.
But no Goo Goo Dolls during the end of the world.
Right, exactly.
That's not one of the songs I want to listen to as I die.
No. But I think that, you know, on their own, they are strong soundtracks. I picked up the first soundtrack for the first film, and I still listen to it. It's a decent compilation of songs. It's not bad. I like this third one. It's not used heavily in the film, but I didn't really expect it to be, so I was surprised, but the score made more sense, so it worked better with the choices they made that way. But you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, in the film it's here and there, and on its own it's a decent soundtrack. It's a fun listen,
and it works well with the movie.
Yeah, when it's used. I just felt it was, you know, when I came out of the movie and I had the soundtrack, I had been listening to the soundtrack and I came out of the movie and I think I even turned to Kate and I was like, was this soundtrack used or are we just listening to it now over the credits? I couldn't even remember a scene when it was used. I mean, I remember it being used a lot more in the first one, but I think that also was kind of playing to the fact that that was how Bumblebee always talked to Sam in the first one, was through the radio.
Right.
So I don't know if that lent itself to using more of that. And there was more like car chasing in the first one that, you know, you could play a more popular song over. But I didn't feel like the soundtrack was used so much in this third film, but on its own, it's a decent soundtrack. Yeah. It's not, you know, bad or anything.
And the composer behind the score, Stephen Jablonsky?
I know, I was going to say his name, and I knew I was going to butcher his last name. Stephen Jablonsky.
Polish?
I don't know.
He might be.
Awesome. But he scored the other two films as well, so they are very consistent in their music choices. You know, he has had the opportunity to kind of create the sound from beginning until now, and I think he's done a really good job at it. So I've always, you know, been impressed with the music on its own and, you know, within the film.
Yeah. People listening, it's actually two separate albums, correct? There's like the album and then the score. Am I right there?
Yeah. There's the soundtrack that will have the Linkin Park and the Goo Goo Dolls. And then there is Stephen Jablonsky's score. Right. With each film, there's always been two album releases, one with just the composed pieces and then with the more popular music.
Unfortunately, the more popular artist, Stan Bush, not found on the soundtrack. For Transformers 3.
Exactly.
You may remember him from The Touch, which was featured in the animated classic, and good personal friend of Ben Pearson. He actually had lunch with him once.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they didn't order any food, but they were in an establishment where they could have had lunch.
Were they just in the same eating establishment at the same time?
No, they actually, they arranged a meeting, and he interviewed him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Some may say he's better than Steve Perry. Some may say he's not as good, but... I don't know if you know this, Allison, or if you came across it, but Transformers 2, I think Stan Bush did like a The Touch remix. And it was called...
That sounds vaguely familiar. I'm on a block now.
Jam song, and I think he played it with Linkin Park. I'm not sure. You may have to research that.
But I might have to set up. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube. It's a terrible rehashing of the original song, but... But I just wanted to say that that song, a Sam Bush song, it's probably good that he's not on these albums because that song does not work well with the kind of film that they're making.
Yeah, not so much. Not so much.
What else did I want to say about Transformers 2? You guys, I guess, didn't miss Megan Fox too much?
I did. I'm going to say it. I did miss her.
She's part of the franchise.
She is. She is. I mean, you know, regardless of what was going on and whatever decisions were made, story-wise alone... I did miss her, and I really felt like they were talking down to the audience by saying, oh, she was a bitch, and we all hated her, and now this girl's super great. And it's like, well, wait, no one ever loved Michaela. I felt like the parents were always very concerned about this very sexy lady hanging out with their, you know, son. I never thought that they were super on board with her, so it was just so easy for them to be like, no, she was terrible. And then I'm looking at the new girlfriend, and I'm like, how is this girl any different? It's the same girl.
I thought she was a supermodel, and I thought they dropped hints that she was a supermodel at the beginning, but then it turns out she's working for, what's his name, McDreamy from Grey's Anatomy.
Right.
But before that, she worked for the British Embassy.
Yeah.
So she worked for the British Embassy, and then she became some guy's assistant. That was kind of weird, too.
And she's dating some unemployed guy that fought with robots.
Exactly, some like...
Not realistic. That's not Weekend at Bernie's realistic.
Yeah, that's not Weekend at Bernie's at all. Oh, my God.
That doesn't happen in real life.
That never happens.
But yeah, I didn't, I mean, her character was just kind of,
it
was kind of a stereotype.
It was. And I mean, I totally get that it's not like Megan Fox wasn't sexed up, and it's not like her trying to fix Sam's car in that first iconic scene from Number One. Mm-hmm. No girl poses like that when she's trying to, you know, fix a radiator cap. I get all of that.
Wow. And
I mean, I guess with the first one, and, you know, maybe it's just one of those things where it's hard to get that first magic back, but you totally understood where this kid was coming from. You got that he was a little bit nerdy. He was trying to get his first car to try to get the girl he had a crush on, and all this crazy stuff started happening. And now in this third one, he's unemployed, and we don't really understand why, but he's got this new supermodel girlfriend that's very understanding.
And he lives in this amazing loft space, but he has no money.
Oh, that has to be like a $1,200 a month place.
Oh, totally.
I don't know how money works, but I'm assuming it's
I don't
money per month.
Matter, but that just doesn't seem right to me.
Talking about LeBouef, I stole that from someone. Don't think that's funny.
Nice.
His acting I really don't like. And I think it's because I don't like him as an infiltrator into some of my, you know, favorite franchises, i.e. Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
But I thought I really liked him in this movie because, I remember pretty well Transformers 1 and 2, but he was so ridiculous in this one that I enjoyed it. And, you know, when I sometimes write on blog posts or articles at notjustnewmovies.com, like I will have this outrageous, quick on the trigger, like temperamental character that will write the review, and he'll like snap at any moment. And when the scene where he tries to get into the army base in his old car, and they start like lifting the gate, and his car starts lifting up, and he's just freaking out, like slamming the steering wheel and just overreacting to all hell. Like I thought it was one of the funnier parts because, like, he just, like, his character is now this nervous. He's not really angry, but he'll shoot into a temper at the drop of a hat because nothing's working out for him.
Exactly.
You know, he feels like shit because his girlfriend's boss is rich, has fast cars. He gave her a Mercedes.
Right.
You know, he can't get a job. His parents are in town, parked outside his place in an RV. Like, you would be freaking out. Like, in the littlest thing where the Autobots won't even let you into their base, and you're just like, God damn it!
And it's like Sam has no other friends.
Yeah.
And he never has.
No.
But he wasn't that overreactional in the first two, and I think I like overreactive LeBouef. So.
I do. I mean, I was going to say, you know, going way back to Shia's roots in the
Hippie days.
Yeah, in Even Stevens' world, where he was really just let loose to chew the scenery and act completely insane. And I remember catching that show, you know, on the Disney Channel, and getting sucked in because I was like, who is this 12-year-old child who's just going balls to the wall, doesn't care at all. This is very, not very Disney-like, but was hilarious because he does play that so well, where he is able to find the comedy in these crazy manic moments. And I will bring it back to Weekend at Bernie's. It was very much like those two crazy nuts in Weekend at Bernie's, where they, you know, just, they go crazy. They get manic, they lose it. And those are sometimes the funniest moments, because I think it plays to what we all wish we could do sometimes, yeah, where things just come and unglued and you're like, I just want to completely lose it and not care what the consequences are. And Shia did do a really good job of playing into that for this third one. And I did enjoy it. I thought that was also really funny.
Did you notice the Even Stevens reunion in the film?
I missed it. I heard about that later. I completely missed it.
It was one of the guys in the military office was the dad, right, from Even Stevens.
That was it. Right. You're right.
And I was watching. It was at the beginning of the movie, too, and I was just kind of like, that's pretty funny. I don't, yeah, know if anyone, yeah, picked up on that.
It completely went over my head, and then when I heard about it later, I was like, of course. Yes, yeah, yes. Yeah, that was pretty good.
I think on Twitter I was like, anyone notice the reunion? And then I tried to link to Christy Carlson Romano's Twitter, but I don't think she had one.
I know. I think I saw that, and I almost wrote to you, and I was like, she was in this? Are you serious?
Yeah, that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to trick people. Not very nice. Also, no, meta aspect of the film, Leonard Nimoy voices Sentinel Prime.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think I was going to post – you posted something a long time ago announcing this, Kate, I believe.
Yes.
On Gordon and the Whale.com, am I correct there?
Yes.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy also voiced Galvatron in the original Transformers movie, which is, for those of you uninitiated, Galvatron is a mutated or evolved form of Megatron after he's damaged beyond repair. So fourth movie, possible return of Megatron, who is then renamed, possibly voiced as Leonard Nimoy to complete the circle. So nice. pretty meta aspect there. Two meta aspects, if you're yes, in that meta stuff. Optimus' thoughts during his battle with Sentinel Prime. Hey, can I get a hand over here? Spoiler alert. That wall surfing scene. The scene where the building is teetering.
Yes, that is a great scene.
Did you guys watch it in IMAX 3D? Because I did.
I watched 3D, not IMAX.
Oh, yeah, that's okay. Right. It wasn't 3D. Well, see, I don't remember.
3D movies kind of hurt my eyes. I don't know if you guys saw the same thing, but watching on IMAX and sitting a little ways back, this movie looked really good.
Yeah.
Especially that scene.
I could see that. I did think that at some points where I was like, the IMAX probably would have looked really good here. But, you know, it did do well, I guess, with the 3D. I mean, it didn't bug me or take me out of it as much as other 3D movies have, so.
Yeah. It's so expensive, though. Like,
I know.
I mean, I can't imagine in LA where, you know, movie prices are significantly higher than other places.
Oh, we just have to mortgage our house every time we go to the
movie. Right, you know, an arm and a leg, poor Alvin, yeah, you know, to get to a movie ticket. But yeah, that scene, like, I don't remember hearing that Transformers was one of the movies that was, like, the longest rendering process of any movie ever made. I don't know if you guys had heard any stats on this one, but that one scene had to have taken, you know, 2 months or something to render.
I believe it.
Like just the ins and outs of the tentacles and then them falling and then, you know, the squirrel flyers.
They're
called. I'm not in the military, so I don't know what
the air jumpers. Whatever.
Another dose of reality. I don't even. Is that even possible? Have you guys seen a documentary?
Yeah. Well, I read something that like Michael Bay saw like a Dateline special or something about like base jump out of helicopters and was like, that is awesome, and I want to put it in the movie, and so that's why they did it. They just put it in because he saw it and thought it looked cool.
But these people were like shooting across over the streets, like control.
Like, just like, oh, like, they would look somewhere, and that's where they'd be going, between giant high-rises. I don't know if that is true, but in Michael Bay's world, it is.
I'd be too busy screaming to actually steer myself.
Yeah, definitely.
And, you know, 5 seconds later, I'd be dead.
Right into a building.
Yeah, that'd be it.
Any other thoughts on Transformers 3? I'm glad you guys joined me for this. I wanted to get, you know, my thoughts and other people's thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, supplemental Transformers review. It was one of my favorite movies this summer. I really enjoyed it.
I was entertained while watching it, but I mean, just compared to how much I enjoyed the first one, I really didn't like it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it was certainly better than two, but
right.
But that's you know, at the same time, I feel like that's such a cop-out at this point, yeah. where it's like, oh, you know, this yeah. movie was not as bad as this terrible, horrible movie that everyone hated. It's yeah. like, is that a compliment?
Yeah.
Like, really. you don't look as bad as you used to look when you looked really bad. Like, what I don't understand.
The tagline for every Michael Bay movie from now on. Hey, it's not Transformers 2. Come on.
Exactly. It's not Transformers 2, so I guess it's okay.
But if you guys were in charge of Transformers 4, Transformers, what do you think could be added? What do you think should be taken out? I mean, you know, open-ended question.
I mean, I think that we've got to reestablish the emotional connections, yep. however that needs to happen. We need to reestablish Sam's relationship with Bumblebee and with Optimus Prime and not focus so much on linking him up with the girl. The girl was never the issue in the first one. She was certainly there, and she was the thing that, you know, would be in peril sometimes, that Sam would become a hero and go help her. But it was always, you know, his relationship with Bumblebee, how he got involved with these guys to kind of do this otherworldly thing. And I think we need to go back to that idea and not worry about what hot girl we're sticking into it.
Yeah.
And then also there needs to be some consequences. And I'm not yeah. saying that, you know, I'm hoping death and destruction on some of these characters.
Oh, I am.
But, you know, exactly. Like, someone has got to go, just for the sense that, you know, otherwise you're just going to always know and watch passively and say, oh yeah, you know, they got a little bit dinged up, but yeah. we all know that they're going to be okay. And like Kate referenced in that first one, when they were taking the Autobots away from Sam and how upset he was, going back to that emotion yeah. and that, you know, kind of peril and, you know, needing to save his friends, I think that's what we need to get back to.
Yeah, definitely. No, we need to get that emotional connection, and everything else is just kind of silly. And like, I think this adding in this revisionist history is completely unnecessary. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's about a boy in his car.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on all points. I think, yeah, we get the point that he gets every hot girl that exists on right. Earth yeah. in this yeah. movie. Less robots would probably be in a step up in the right direction, at least. Because, again, you know, there were 9 Autobots, 9, that right. I guess were featured throughout, but no one ever dropped any names, so you kind of had to guess. And then unlimited amounts of Decepticons where... Right. They could attack at any time.
Yeah, I remember in the first one that, you know, there were a handful of Autobots, but mm-hmm. it was helpful because they all kind of come out of the woodwork when they realize that there's a threat imminent and they right. need to reveal themselves as robots. And then you were introduced to this core group that Sam was now going to be working with. And then I felt like after a battle, they would all kind of come back together and be like, oh my God, we lost this person, but this person's still here, but now Bumblebee can't talk. And even though it's yeah. cheesy, you would have that kind of recap where you kind of reconnected with everybody. You knew all the players in the game. Whereas like you're saying with this one, there were so many robots, so many moving parts that it just became a spectacle and you weren't connected to anything. You didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
Who arm was being blown off, who had fallen off the building. You're like, I don't know. I can't tell one from the other at this point. So I really don't care.
Is it an Autobot? Is it a Decepticon? I don't know.
Yeah. Exactly.
And then the first one, when the Decepticons came, like, there was that scene where they were all rolling in and they'd be like, oh, you know, Swiss Army knife reporting yeah. for duty. And you're yeah. like, oh, okay, well, there's...
yeah, there's Swiss Army knife. So.
Kitchen hot plate.
Yeah.
Here to warm things up.
Exactly. Oh, evil toaster's here now. Okay. Well, cool. I mean,
I'm Spork, Optimus. Welcome to the team. Yeah, I think more robots, or no, excuse me, less robots, but more robot storyline. Like, you know, you hardly ever hear, I mean, Optimus Prime, voiced by Peter Cullen, he has this great voice, and it was hardly utilized because, you know, 2 hours of the 2-hour and 45-minute film, you know, was a lot of focus on the human storylines, which is fine because right. it's humans and Transformers, but we're going to see Transformers, not Samformers.
Right.
And,
right.
you know, we want to know the history behind these characters, but, you know, they never refer to it. You know, we always hear the narrator talk about it at the beginning, but you never hear, like, the Autobots back in the base talking about the old days or something that right. gives background to these characters who... You know, from the cartoons and from people's love for the series, you know, these characters are being underutilized, I guess, for action and explosions and how much destruction can we cause. So, you know, it's one direction or the other. I don't know. Have you guys heard who's in charge of the next movie? Is it going to be Bay again?
I have not heard. I know Michael Bay has a couple of smaller projects that he wants to do, but who knows?
Yeah. Maybe we'll see an X-Men First Class or something where it kind of reverts back to character-driven as opposed to, you know, any X-Men can we have in this movie.
Yeah. All the Autobots in high school. And that's another thing. I never watched cartoon. So I have no idea, like, where Transformers come from. Like, this, you know, I don't know anything about their planet. How are Transformers born?
Seriously. I think it's the AllSpark. I think it's the AllSpark.
Is it the AllSpark? I mean, it's like you touch the AllSpark or whatever, or it touches something and you turn into a Transformer. Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't seem very special to me. Like, we're supposed to be like,
I mean, I agree.
These are like some amazing aliens, but hey, in the second one, like a giant Mountain Dew machine became a Transformer. That doesn't mean a lot to me.
Right. Yeah. Right. That's true. Oh, yeah. Wasn't it a toaster in the first one as well that touched the AllSpark?
Yeah. It was like a boombox. And A,
there was
wasn't
a toaster.
It like, wasn't it on like, Air Force One and there was a boombox?
Yes.
I was like, guys, it's Air Force One.
There's a
I'm
sweet
pretty
boombox.
Sure that boombox is not on Air Force
One. Who's listening to a boombox, like just rocking it on their shoulder while serving towels to the president? Here's your health counselor.
Yeah, walking up and down the aisles. Hey, yo.
And then some Two Live crew, what's going on, whatever's in there.
I mean, granted, you know, the fake George W. did send his stewardess down to like the bunker to get him a ding dong.
Oh, what was up with the terrible CG face of Kennedy and McNamara back in the 60s?
Bad.
Like, you can't do an over-the-shoulder shot with just some hair and a bad impersonation. You have to go full facial features.
But it's like they use footage of JFK, and then they have an actor, and then they do a weird CG thing.
Yeah.
They use all these different things, and it all looks terrible.
Yeah, it was so bad. And I'm a huge fan of Robert McNamara, who was Secretary of Defense during the 60s, and I was like, he looks like that doesn't look anything like him. It looked a little like him because his hair was slicked back.
Yeah,
but none of those characters looked like anyone from history.
Oh,
all these Transformers.
Well, I mean, obviously, I don't think Michael Bay has a big respect.
No, apparently not.
Yeah. And, you know, reimagining things can be kind of cool. And, you know, he did that in the first one with the Arctic Circle stuff.
Right, right.
And, you know, and then this one with the moon. And that's okay, but it kind of made me uncomfortable. It was like, the only reason we went to the moon was to get this robot alien. And it just sort of diminishes the whole thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He stretches too far. And I guess maybe the key, if there is a fourth, you know, whomever is going to be in charge of it, is we got to bring it back down to a more manageable story, and we can still have the spectacle. We can still have all of the great effects and whatnot, but the core story has got to be a lot more simple. Like Kate said, a boy in his car, that we can all work with, but a boy and his now distant car and new hot girlfriend and Looney Tune parents and hot plate and, you know, dealing with the recession and, you know, the moon landing was fake. Too many things. You lost me so long ago.
And then Gecko shows up out of nowhere.
Exactly.
Greed is legal now. Get
off
of this
like
on this.
We're now combining. Yeah. You know, I was waiting for Billy Bob Thornton to show up and like be like, hey, guess what? And I'm like, this is too many things.
Yeah. No.
Shia, this is your life.
Yeah. The crystal skull like rolls out of some of the like destruction that was destroyed one of the warehouses from Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Oh, maybe an Autobot in the next Indiana Jones movie. That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
People would love that. That's our I'm gonna stop it right there. It's getting late. It's after midnight, for God's sakes. Come on.
Whew.
We are in this
for hours.
We are in this open all night Chinese restaurant, just bothering the hell out of these guys.
Yeah. Just being crazy.
I mean, I guess I can order another thing of egg rolls, but
another thing.
Yeah.
All right, I'm down. I'll throw into that. Have you guys ever thought, like, you know, you don't like your fortune in the fortune cookies, so you just open multiple fortune cookies? Like, which fortune plays? All of them? Just the last one?
I always feel like it's the last one. The last one.
The one you like, so it's good that you open one you like,
well,
and that one sticks.
Like, sometimes I'll get one and be like, I don't like this, and open a second one, and the second one will be worse, but I always feel like that's the one I'm stuck with now.
I don't want to pull
the dice.
But I mean, if you go to a Chinese restaurant, when they give you your bill, like if there's four people at your table, they give you four fortune cookies.
Sometimes someone doesn't want theirs.
Well, but that's still their fortune, I feel.
You can't just reject the fortune.
Exactly.
Like, you're going to die. You're like, I don't like that one. It's like, you're going to die painfully. And you're like, oh, great.
True.
So, yeah, that was Transformers 3. Another brick in the wall.
Yeah. Another brick in the wall.
I'd like to thank my guests on the second episode of After Midnight, I guess. Cater Bland and Allison Loring.
Woo!
Woo! Woo! And seriously, Movinos really needs to be a podcast.
I agree.
The other aspect of it is you could talk about the wine you're drinking. Like, that would be an aspect of the show. So you're like, hey, I'm drinking a Napa Valley Rosé from 1992. And then, you know, once you get started, like, people will become huge fans of this. And they'll start sending you exotic wines from where they are. And then
I do like this idea. It could be like a combo wine and movie review podcast. Yep. I like that idea.
Cinemalier or something like that.
Yeah.
Then we get free movies and free wine. So that's pretty much all we need
right there. Free popularity, free wine.
It's
a win-win-win for you guys.
It is. I like it.
So I guess we better get going. I'll talk to you guys later.
Thanks, Tyler.
You got the touch. You got the power.